The Asian Classics Institute presents The Art of Reasoning with Geshe Michael Roach, recorded live in New York City in March of 1998.
This is the beginning of Class 4.
What's the relationship between the term quality and qualityness and a quality and the quality? So there's four different things you have to worry about. Okay, qualityness, quote quality as a term or maybe meaning a mental image of something, and then the quality and a quality. And you have to work with that. You know, you have to decide. There's a reason to use quotation marks because quote car is different from car. A general characteristic of something. Something like that. A general nature of something. How's that? But you have to struggle with that. There's a difference between car and a car and the car. You could say that. I think we'd better come in the break and ask me things, because otherwise you'll be here very late and you'll be chasing us out. Okay. One thing I want to say about the class in general, I had a lot of comments on the reading this time, and people had a hard time with it. So I want to make a couple of comments about the reading. One is, I'm trying to translate the whole text, just because if I translate half and then I never translate the whole thing, I'll never have time to do it again. Never, ever. So I just thought that while I'm got it in my hands, I might as well do the whole thing. I don't mean that you should digest the entire logic text, you know, in this class. It's impossible. So don't get frustrated trying. You know what I mean? You should read the reading. I suggest you take it kachik by kachik. Kachik means one argument. You know, when it says kachik nare or konare at the beginning in the Tibetan, it means somebody comes and makes the following claim. Usually, somebody comes and says, kachik means one mouth. You know, one person comes and says that. So take it kachik by kachik. We call each vignette or each section there a kachikma. And do one kachikma. It's like a koan. You know, and think about it. Don't try to read that book. I mean, don't try to read that reading. You'll go crazy. You know, I mean, nobody does that. I forgot to tell you that, right? yeah, nobody does that. They are koans. They are things to be thought about for hours. You know, you cannot rush this reading. Forget it. This is not one that you can fake, you know. You can do the homework. The homework is meant to be fakeable. You know, that's something you can just fill in whatever I wrote on the board and you'll probably be okay. But to really understand the subject, you have to devote many hours to it. And you can't get out of it, you know. And I can't tell you, don't spend hours on it, because you have to. You know, I can't give you some kind of a special exception or something. You must devote time to it. If you want to understand this subject, you're going to have to sit there and do each kachikma until you understand it. And I suggest you do one and then digest that one first. And then when you get it, then go on to the next one. If there's one that's totally impossible for you, then skip it and go on to the next one. You know, but don't try to sit there and read it like a novel, because you'll never get it. And you'll just frustrate yourself. And I don't mean you to get... The thing that you must know is what I present in the class. The thing that you should come out of this course understanding is what I present in the class. You can spend 5 or 6 more years understanding. We spend about... the whole subject in the monastery takes about 8 years or something. You know, the two subjects that you're getting, formal logic and dura, it takes like 8 years. We debate it for 3 solid months every year. And in the winter debates, for 1 month a year, we debate it maybe 12 or 14 hours a day, maybe more, sometimes all night. So, you know, we've memorized all that stuff over and over, many times. And you know, you can't just sit down and read it. You have to take it bit by bit. Okay, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I like them. Yeah, we can do that. We can do that. I mean, just you see, they're called Drotang, Rikpe Drotang. Say Rikpe? Drotang. Rikpe? Drotang. Drotang is a special expression in logic that means the format of an argument. You know, like, how does it go? Dang means the way. Like, Gyuktang means how a horse trots. You know, do they trot like that or do they trot like that? Dang means how you do something, and Drotang means how it goes. You know, how, where do you answer yes, where do you answer no, when are you supposed to say no, I don't get it, or not necessarily, and that's called Rikpe Drotang. And once you understand one kachikma well, the Drotang is the same for all of them. You know, once you understand the possible answers, the flowchart, for one small argument, then the rest is all the same. So we can try to do that if we have extra time. That's like the Lingga that the teacher promised his students. Lingga means, Norba Lingga means jewel park, right? And the Dalai Lama's summer palace in Lhasa. Lingga means to go on a camping trip or a picnic, an outing, right? In Tibet they would go for like 5 days. They still do it in India. And, you know, eat for 5 days and sleep in a tent out near a river or something. Like my class will go every once in a while. So there's this famous story of a teacher who... the students kept asking the teacher, can we go for a Lingga, you know? And he said, yeah, when all the work's done, we'll go for a Lingga, you know? And then week after week, month after month, year after year, and they were studying, they never had time to go anywhere. And then finally, one day they're having a class, and outside a funeral goes by, and the body's being carried by. And one of the students said, look, somebody's finally going for their Lingga, you know? Meaning we won't get a Lingga. Probably we won't get to that. I don't know. We'll see. But we'll do. We'll do. So don't take the reading personally, okay? I had all these people leaving notes on my bed and stuff. You know. So it's just that the quantity is because I want to finish it, because I may never have another chance to touch it. You know. The content will take years. But don't give up. You know. I mean, don't go home and just put it up and say, oh, he said I didn't have to read it this time. It's not like that. Like, go to the Rangluk, go to the middle where our system starts, and read that for sure. That's what we do in the monastery. We sneak to the middle and find out what we're supposed to believe. And then we go back and, you know, you're not supposed to do it that way, but everybody does, you know. Go in the middle, look at the, you know, the presentation of our system, and then go back to the beginning and hear all the arguments. And it might be easier for you, but at least do the Rang Luk, you know, at least do the middle of the reading, okay? Ellie's going to, can you go and pick up the reading today during the break? Can you go with it? Okay. It's a little bit big this time. They couldn't copy it on time. All right. Tonight's special subject. And don't give up on logic, okay? I mean, you're doing pretty good. I expected it to be about half as many people. It's all the necessary stuff, ammunition you need to study emptiness. You need to know all this stuff, okay? To study emptiness properly. So stick in there. Gyunde. Tonight's subject is Gyunde. Say Gyunde. Gyunde. In English we say cause and effect. Gyu means cause, De means result or effect. I call it causes and result, okay? Because we can never remember how to spell effect or effect. So result you can remember, right? Causes and results, all right? And there are two presentations in the Dura on causes and results. We are studying the easier one, okay? There's two of them. I'm not even going to go to the other one, okay? This one is 60 pages long or something, okay? That's enough. The shorter one, okay? And it's called Gyunde. They start out by discussing the definition of a gyu, of a cause. And that's here. By the way, this second part is the same, okay? Gyu teni. Okay, say kyeje. Gyu teni. Kyeje. Ke, with the da suffix letter, means to bring something else about, okay? To cause something else to happen, okay? Kj means anything which brings something else about. Anything which brings about something else, okay? Anything which causes something else to occur is the definition of a cause, okay? Anything which brings about another thing is the definition of a cause. It's popular to translate this as generate, and then they say generate love or generate compassion. And I searched the New York Times for the last 30 years. It's never been used that way. You know, you say develop an emotion. Develop, but you don't say generate in the sense, in the case of an emotion. You generate electricity or generate other things, but... It means anything which brings another thing about, okay? It's the definition of a cause. And these three words, which is Jebu and Lopo and Gyu. Are Denchi. Say Debu. Means what? Result. Okay, that's the day in Gyunde. By the way, in Tibetan it also means rice or fruit. Because the big fruit or the big result in Asia is rice. That's the one you're hoping for every year. So the word for rice is Jay. The word for fruit, like a fruit tree, fruit is Debu. And the word for result or effect is Debu. Okay? Say Ngopo. You know Ngopo, it's anything that does anything. Anything that performs a function. I translate it as a working thing. And you've had that already. Okay, Ngopo. Gyu you had tonight, it means cause. All three of these words are Dunchik. Dunchik means same thing. Means the same thing. They are synonyms. They all refer to the same thing. Okay? The text is very adamant on that. Anything that does anything is automatically a cause. Anything that's a cause is automatically a result. Period. Okay? Dunchik means they all refer to the same thing. Okay? Then people, you'll see the Kachigmas, they go crazy trying to find something that might be a debu but not a gyu. For example, say Marmekechikama. Marme Kechitama. Kechitama means the last instant of something. Marme, those of you who are coming to Friday night, the same as Dunme, it means a butter lamp, the flame of a butter lamp. So the debater, you know, the other guy is saying, Marme Kechitama Chuchen. You know, think about a butter lamp at the last moment of its thing. The Gyuyin Bata. Are you telling me it's a cause? And then he said, Chichir, and he says, Dibuyin Bishin, because it's a result. And you said, result, cause, working thing, all mean the same thing, essentially. You said anything that's one is the other. Okay. So how are we going to answer? Is it a Jebu? Is it a result? Yeah. It came from the butter lamp of the moment before, the flame of the moment before. Is it a gyu? Is it a cause? But don't forget, this is the last instant of its existence. Huh? Cause for what? That's a little tricky. So you have to bring a light in to have darkness, right? Well, you know, I was thinking about that. You can say it causes your perception of it, okay? We say it's a KJ for, it does inspire a sense perception in the next moment. So actually, the light has already gone out, but you're not aware of the lamp, flame, until the millisecond later, according to Buddhist psychology. You know, it takes a millisecond for your eye to record and give the sense data to the eye consciousness that there is something here, and it helps to create the visual consciousness. So in the second after it's already gone out, one of the effects is that you're aware of the light. And you're always a moment behind. In Abhidharma psychology, you're always a millisecond behind reality. It's like the light of some of the stars has already ended, right? I mean, those stars have already gone out of existence, but light years later, the light is only just reaching Earth. We may be looking at the stars that don't exist right now, but the light took that long to get to us. And it's the same principle. So you can say it's a cause for the visual consciousness of the next moment. Okay, so it is a cause and a result. And then they say, well, what about the last moment of an arhat, you know? This is the Hinayana school, right? They believe that just after you achieve arhat, or to be an arhat means that Vemrit Gyunchepa means your mind and your body stop. And there's nothing more any after that. There's nothing else after that. That's a Hinayana version of nirvana. Is that you just stop. Your mind stops and your body stops. So then they say, what about that? You know, that's a result, but it's not a cause for a person anymore. And then there's big arguments like that. By the way, Mahayana says, well, what arhat are you talking about, please? You know, who achieved arhat? Who achieved nirvana? Because there's nobody there anymore to be an arhat. So how can there be an arhat? You know what I mean? And we don't accept that interpretation. We say arhat means what? You finished your negative emotions permanently. Okay? That's all. Nirvana is the condition of ending all your mental afflictions permanently. And you could have achieved it this morning and you would probably look the same to us. Okay? We don't say that you have to go out of existence to get to be an arhat. Okay? Or to reach nirvana. So this is very tricky and you have to think about it. Okay? That everything in the world which is a cause is also a result. Anything which is a result is also a cause. Anything which does anything is a cause. Anything which does anything is necessarily a result. Okay? And you have to think about it. Okay? That's one of the greatest lessons of the study of Gyunde. Okay? And you have to think about it. Next we'll do the divisions of causes. Saying Mugyu. Gyu-gyu. 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 Okay. Ngu means direct. Gyu means cause. Gyu means indirect. And gyu means cause. Okay. If your pronunciation of Tibetan is correct, this da drops out and the sound gets shorter. Listen to the difference. This one is gyu. This one is gyu. 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 Say gyu. 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 Okay, that's all. Different sound really. This is the same ngu as in ngupo, and don't get confused. It does not mean working thing or anything like that. It means direct. Okay? Wu Gyu means direct cause. This, by the way, is the Gyu in, this is the Tibetan word for lineage. Okay, so if you want to know, it's useful to know. The Tibetan word for Tantra is Gyu without the Ba. Okay? Meaning a sacred thread. And that's another story. Alright? So these are the one way to divide causes. You can divide causes two different ways. I'm giving you the first way. Mugyu and Gyu Gyu. Let's take an example of a Mugyu. Okay? Say, Ben. Ki. Nga loksu. Chua. Ben. Ki. Nga loksu. Chua. I want to teach you a little bit about how Tibetans corrupt English. Okay? It's called Surchak. Surchak means busted up English. Alright? And Ben is one of them, okay? This is a Ben. Alright? Ben. And you gotta learn to spell corrupted English right. Like I was reading this Tibetan newspaper with Rinpoche one day, and it was all about the Wetkin and the Bob. And I said, what's the Wetkin and Wob? You know, he said, oh, that's the Pope in the Vatican, you know. Wetgen Bob. Wetgen Bob. You know, and so normally they only hear our aspirated row, right? Pa, cha, ta, as pa, cha, ta. And that's why Tibetans or anyone from South Asia talks like, I'd like a cup of tea and hand me the pen. Because they don't aspirate anything. Okay? And that's, we can't aspirate. So to them, we sound worse. You know, because we're always saying, like Kawa, we say Kawa. Kawa is a pillar. Kawa means snow. Kawa means where. Ga means a saddle. Okay, and to us, to them, our pronunciation is much worse than that. Okay, but you have to get a little bit, if you're going to read modern Tibetan stuff, newspapers. I saw a statistic that 60% of Tibetans under 25 write their correspondence in English. They can't write Tibetan. Okay, Tibet is dying. The language is dying very quickly. You got to get used to this if you're going to study Tibetan. Ben. Computer? Computer? Okay. We have a big computer project. And you have to study that. Anyway, Ben. It's good to start to learn those things, okay? Tibetan government tried to get them to use fancy Tibetan words for, like, Suktong Lungtin. Say Suktong Lungtin. Suktong. Lungtin, a physical form seeing wind cloud, which is television. Okay, and it didn't work. They call it TV, you know. It's like the French, you know. Okay, anyway. Thank you. Sorry, Eric. Nalosu chuma. Nalosu chuma is an important word to know. Okay? It means the pen as it was a moment ago. Okay? Nalok means flopped over into the past. Lok means like, shabale lok means turn the pancake over. You know, lok means to flop something over. Lok su chuma means flop it over. Nalo su chuma means the thing that flopped over into the present reality. Okay? The pen that flopped over into the current pen. Okay? The pen as it was the moment before. I translate it that way. Okay? The pen as it was a moment ago is called pen king nalo su chuma. The previous flopping over of the pen, okay? The just finished flopping over of the pen means the pen as it was a moment ago, okay? The pen as it was a moment before. And that's an example of a lugyu, a direct cause. For what? The current pen. You see what I mean? The pen as it was a moment ago is the direct cause for the current pen. Say, pen di, ngalok su chunga. Penki, ngalo su chuma. So a gyugyu naturally is penki ngalo su chuma the ngalo su chuma. Okay? The pen as it was a moment before, the pen as it was the moment before. Okay? An indirect cause of the pen is the pen as it was a moment before, it was a moment before. Okay? And you have to get used to that. I mean, the monastery, you do like 20 of them in a row. Penki ngalo su chuma, ngalo su chuma, ngalo su chuma, ngalo su chuma, yimba ta. And then you're like, you just keep track whether it's odd or even, you know. And then you just listen and you say, you know, you don't even try to conceptualize what the guy's saying. You just keep track of if he's doing odd or even, you know, and then you can give the right answer, you know. But sometimes it's like 17 in a row or something. you know. And it just it gets you to think faster and think sharper. Okay, so the so an example of an indirect cause would be the pen as it was a moment ago, as it was the moment before. Okay, that's all. All right, that's a gyugyu. The pen as it was 2 seconds ago, all right, is the gyugyu of the present pen. It's the indirect cause. The direct cause is the pen as it was a moment before. Okay? In Tibetan, thinking also chungwa is the direct cause. Thinking also chewing also chungwa is the indirect cause. Okay? And you got to get used to that. Okay? What's an indirect cause of this building being here, Lincoln's assassination? And you got to get used to that. You know? I mean, all the events of the past in Abhidharma that didn't prevent the construction of this building are its causes. Okay. That's another story. Right. But you got to get used to that. Indirect causes are pretty freaky. And when you start to meditate a lot, you'll start to become more aware of the indirect causes of your mind. And very early in your life, I mean, there's a certain stage in meditation that happens at Jorlam Sopa, where you can start to remember things that happened long ago. And it's by some kind of ngala suchuwa, ngala suchuwa, ngala suchuwa. You're able to link into the one that came before, 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 especially with regard to the thoughts you're having. Like, deep in meditation, you start to be able to trace why you're having this thought back to the first time you ever had such a thought, and then back before that. And it's very cool. And it's called Shugyungi Tingenzin. It's a special kind of samadhi where you can perceive especially Dharma teachings or Dharma realizations that you had 100 years ago or something, and the stream of them coming into your current mind. And that's Ngalok Sochuan is very important for that. So you have to get used to that. You know, there'll come a time long before you see emptiness directly where you can trace back the thoughts you've had for many, many decades. And especially Dharma teachings you've had. And that's a special kind of event that you can expect if you meditate regularly. If you don't meditate regularly, or if you're always making up excuses why you can't do it every day, I can promise you it won't happen to you, and you can just sit there in class and be amazed that maybe this thing exists. But if you do practice it every day, happily and joyfully, and not because you feel like it's an obligation, but because you enjoy it, then sooner or later you'll start to have that. And it's very cool. It saves a lot of time, right? Okay? Okay. It's a natural result of meditating frequently. And frequently just means like an hour a day or 45 minutes a day. Okay? But without stopping. Okay, here's the second kind of way of dividing causes. Say Nyelen Gigyu. Nyelen Gigyu. Nyelen Gigyu. And then the opposite is Senjik Cheken. Senjik Cheken. Those of you who studied the course on proving past and future lives are well acquainted with these two guys. To draw this distinction between them is necessary for understanding why you have been here before. Okay, so we'll go through that now. That's the main application of this distinction, is that it helps you to understand why you must have had a past life and why you will have a future life. Okay, Nyelen Gigyu means, I try to tell you that's material cause versus a contributing factor. Can a person act as a cause for a clay pot, a water pitcher? Yeah, sure. Because they can make it, okay? They can be the person who makes it. So they are a cause for the water pitcher. If you take the definition of a cause, they help to bring it about, right? They can make that other thing come about. Without the human there forming it, it wouldn't have happened. Are they the material cause? Are they the stuff that turned into a water pitcher? No. That's the clay or ceramic. Okay, whatever. Okay, the clay or the glass or whatever. And that's a distinction, okay? They are not the stuff. When I say material cause, I mean the stuff that turned into the result. Okay, and you have to get used to making that distinction. All the other things are just contributing factors. So it's almost like the main cause and then all the secondary causes. In the case of a plant or a tree, what's the nirlingigyu? What's the material cause? Is a seed. And then the contributing factors are sunlight, water, the soil, fertilizer, warmth, time, a farmer. Okay, all of those things are contributing factors. Okay, and that's the difference. Nirlingigyu is the seed or the clay. And then Hanjik Chekin is the potter or the wheel or the kiln or the other stuff. Okay, and that's a distinction, and you have to make that distinction. Contributing factors for the creation of a human mind at its first moment of its existence in your mother's womb. Hanjik Chekin, contributing factors are your parents, you know, the sperm, the blood, the fact that they had relations, you know, all of these things are contributing factors. They are not the nirlingigyu, okay? They are not the mental stuff that turned into your consciousness at the first moment of your conception. If their mental material were the nirlingigyu, were the main or material cause of your mind at its first moment, your mind would share some of the qualities of their minds automatically. If they were talented musicians, you would always be a talented musician. You know, if they were like gentle, peaceful, happy people, then the children of peaceful, happy, gentle people would always be peaceful, happy, and gentle. And you know that ain't the case. The worst kids in my high school were the kids of all the ministers and rabbis and stuff like that. You know what I mean? I mean, that's the evidence that the stuff or the material of the mind, which is not a physical stuff but a mental stuff, has not come from your parents, okay? It's come from somewhere else. There must be some mental stuff that turned into the mind, your mind as it existed in your mother's womb at the first moment of your consciousness, of your awareness. And that's one of the proofs for a past life, that there must have been an instant of consciousness prior to that to act as the nirlingigyu, to act as the material cause for your mind, okay? And that's where we use material cause. That's where that's an important concept, okay? I'm going to give you the definition of a material cause. Okay, rangi means it. Ze is the word I've been using, stuff, okay, or material. And again, mind can be one kind of stuff. Physical matter can be one kind of stuff. I'm using the word stuff in a very general sense, okay? Gyun means continuation. Do means as a. Tsor means primarily. KJ, as we saw before, means brings about another. Or it brings about something else. So, if you put it into English word order, anything which brings about something else primarily as a continuation of the same stuff as it was before is the definition of a nirlingigyu, a material cause. Okay, anything which brings about something else primarily as a continuation of the same material and the same stuff is the definition of a material cause. Okay. As the clay is for the pot, as the seed is for the tree, as the last moment of your Bardo's mind was for the first moment of your consciousness in this life. And that's your meditation, by the way, and it's cool. You know, go back in your meditation as far as you can. It's very, very good exercise during the study of Gyunde to go back as far as you can remember in your life. You know, try to go back to the first consciousness that you're aware of. I mean, for me, it's of a blanket in my crib. I remember a certain kind of light blue blanket that was very soft. And I remembered that. That's the earliest thing I can remember, normally. You know what I mean? And do that exercise. You know, go back, like, do a meditation where you focus on your current thought. And if you meditate a lot, this is easy, okay? Like you are thinking about something. And then you realize that you couldn't have had that thought without a thought you had a year ago. And then you realize that you couldn't have had that thought unless you had another thought a year before that. And then you work yourself back. And you can do that during meditation. Try to get back in theory, okay? It won't be a direct perception. It won't be a direct awareness. But try to get back logically to the first moment in the womb, okay? And it would have been some kind of very primitive thought that, oh, it's hot in here, it's hot, you know, wet, uncomfortable, something like that. I mean, according to Buddhist scripture, it's extremely uncomfortable and you're aware of it at that moment. You know, while you're in the womb for those 9 months, you have these primitive awarenesses of being very, very choked in and hot and confined, and that it's very unpleasant for the child in the womb. And that they're having already very primitive awarenesses of how unpleasant it is, you know. Every time the mother moves quickly or jars, even eats certain foods, that the embryo is very sensitive and is constantly made uncomfortable by those things, you know. And try to go back and imagine the first thought in your mother's womb, and then try to compare it to the pot or to the tree, and try to see if you can understand why you must have had a mind before. Okay, and that's a good exercise for past lives. Okay, and you have to stay aware of this definition. That's the definition. You're looking for the thing that was primarily bringing about a continuation of the mind of the past life. Okay, and that was the last thought you had in the Bardo, in the as a spirit between lives. The last conscious thought you had was the cause, the Nyerlingi Gyu, the material cause of the first moment of consciousness in your mother's womb. And you have to get used to that. And you have to explore it, your mind, and see if there's anything left. Okay, and you can do it. If you meditate deeply, you can get very close to it. Okay? Next thing. Now I'll give you the definition of a result. Say, Geja, Debritini. Geja, Debritini. Geja means the opposite of Geje, okay? Geja means anything which is brought about by another thing. Okay? Anything which is brought about by another thing is the definition of a result, okay? Geja means anything which is brought about by another thing. Debu means a result. Debritini means that's the definition of a result. Results can also be divided the same way as causes, and I'm not going to go into it, okay? Direct results, indirect results, you already know that. I mean, you can figure it out. The result of the material cause and the result of the contributing factors, okay? And you can, I don't have to get into that. Yeah? Yeah? You could have a direct contributing factor that was a direct cause. You see, the sunlight of the moment, the sunlight of the moment before the potter at the last moment before the pot comes into existence is a direct cause for the pot, but not a material cause for the pot, because he doesn't turn into the pot. That's all. Yeah. Okay. So they're not exactly the same. Okay. I'm going to pretty much stop there. You have 60 pages of reading on that to play with, okay? It kept us up for about 4 nights in a row. All right? And if you see zombies in the class, they were probably helping. But you should be aware of one thing, and that's called relationships. We'll get into it later. But so far you've had two relationships that are possible between two different objects. You've had both of them so far. One is the relationship between a quality and a characteristic. Okay? It's the relationship between Chevrolet and car. Okay? Or car and Chevrolet. To be a Chevrolet is to be a car. And that's called a lo-chipe-doa. Okay? That means a relationship where to be one is to be the other, automatically. Okay? And that's a lo-chipe-doa. That's one possible kind of relationship. There are only three possibilities between two objects on this planet or in this universe. Either they don't have a relationship, or they have a Chevrolet car relationship, or they have a cause and effect relationship. And those are the only three possibilities, according to Buddhist logic, according to Buddhism. And it's important to understand them. Okay, I'll say it again. Two different objects, me and the pen, me and you, you and your mind, your right eyebrow and your left eyebrow. Okay? There's only three possible things going on between them. One is no relationship. The second is a relationship of identity. I call it a relationship of identity, you know, like the relationship between Chevrolet and car. And then the third possibility is cause and effect relationship. They are related in the sense of being cause and effect. And these are the three possibilities that can exist between any two objects in the universe. Okay? What's an example of a relationship of identity is car and Chevrolet. What's the test of whether a relationship holds? Remove one and see if the other disappears. Okay? If you removed all cars in the world, would you remove all Chevrolets in the world? Yes. So they have a relationship. Okay? If you removed your right eyebrow, would you necessarily remove your left eyebrow? No. So we say they don't have a direct relationship. Okay? If you remove the seed, do you remove the tree? Yeah, so they have a relationship. You see what I mean? Now, tricky one. If you remove all Chevrolets, do you remove all cars? So we say Chevrolet shares a relationship of identity with car, but car does not share a relationship of identity with Chevrolet. It's a one-way, what do you call it, a one-way street. And you have to get used to that. Some of them go two ways, some of them only go one way. How many ways does it go between automobile and car? Both ways. You see, they're related. You know, if you're a car, you're automatically an automobile. If you're an automobile, you're automatically a car. If you removed all cars in the world, you remove all automobiles. If you removed all automobiles, you remove all cars. We call it a two-way identity relationship. A two-way relationship of identity. Okay. Is there such a thing for cause and effect? If you remove the tree, do you remove the seed? The seed's gone by the time the tree's there. Come on. I mean, in Majjhimika, you get very fancy here. Okay? Think about it. By the way, the answer is no, they don't have a relationship like that. Okay? I mean, if you don't get fancy. Alright? If you don't get fancy, it's okay to say you could remove the tree and it wouldn't affect the cause. Okay? The seed. The seed's already gone. If you removed all the seeds in the world, you wouldn't get any trees. If you remove all the trees in the world, it would not have changed the fact that all the seeds that came from were there. Okay. But they wouldn't have been seeds, would they? Until there are trees around. For purposes of naming, you see what I mean? For purposes of calling them seeds or calling them causes, you must have a result around. So we say, in a very, now I'm getting fancy, okay? You can read it in Pabongkar Rinpoche's commentary to the Three Principal Paths, okay? The fact that it's a cause depends on its result occurring. You see what I mean? You can't call it a cause until the result is there. So in a sense, if you remove the result, the cause doesn't get to be a cause anymore because it didn't cause anything. Okay? But that's getting fancy. Normally we don't say that. Normally cause and effect is a one-way street. Okay? If there's no causes, there's no effect. Therefore they're related. effects are related to causes, but causes are not related to their effects. Because if you remove all the effects, you don't remove all the causes. Okay, you got to get used to that. Why are we talking about this? It has a lot to do with understanding emptiness and perception. Okay, why? Do cars and Chevrolets exist at the same time? Yeah. Do seeds and the trees they cause exist at the same time? No. By the time the tree has occurred, the seed is, by definition, gone because it grew into this big fat tree. Okay? It's gone. And then we debate in the monastery. They talk about, oh, a seed with a sprout coming out, and when, at what point is it a tree, and what point is it a seed, and can you have a seed with a sprout coming out, and is the sprout a tree? Because then you can have a seed and a tree, and you say, no, the part of the seed that's a tree isn't a seed anymore. And, okay, like that. It's a big, huge debate. When does a seed become a tree? No. At what point is the seed gone and the tree is there? Can't you imagine a seed with a sprout coming out halfway? Like, you know, those lousy bean sprouts and they ruin these good sandwiches by putting these things in there. You know, and then you're always like getting one of them in your teeth. Like, that's still a seed, but there's a sprout coming out of it, okay? That proves to me, right? No, and then they'd say, no, the part that's the sprout is gone already and like that, you know? But if you think about it, that's another proof for emptiness. And you can cogitate on that one. You know, at what point does it become a sprout? And if you try to pinpoint it, you'll go crazy and you'll never find a time. And that's an indication of the emptiness of the growth of a seed, of a sprout. Okay? Because isn't it all just your projection when you decide to call it tree or when it becomes tree? You know, theoretically, any moment that you choose to say, this is the moment at which the seed became a tree, could be divided again. And then which moment is it that it became the tree? The first half of the moment that it became the tree, or the second half of the moment that it became a tree? You say, well, the first half. You say, well, what about the first half? What about the first half of the first half and the second half of the first half? And then you'll never find a time when it truly, objectively became a tree. It's a projection. That's another proof for emptiness. And it's one of the five great proofs for emptiness, based on that. Yeah. Loud. Yeah. You can't find... She said, is it the same for the moment that your mind moved from the bardo into your mother's womb, for example? Right. You can't pinpoint a time. Because any particular time you pinpoint, you can divide again. So who's making up this moment? Your projection. That's evidence that there's no external reality there and that it's coming from your mind. And the reason the sun comes up in the morning is a projection of you. Okay, but that's another story. We're not doing Madhyamika, are we? Okay. Yeah. That's a debate. That's a kachikma. I'll show you, okay? By the way, I mean, you got to distinguish between there being a real, externally, existing from its own side, objective moment at which your mind in your past life became turned into the mind in this life, okay, which doesn't exist. And you have to distinguish that from the one that apparently exists because your karma is forcing you to think that it exists. And that one exists. And that one brought you into this life. And that one's going to kill you. So it's real. You know, really, seriously, that one, it is a projection. But that's what makes it real. You know, people say, oh, it's a projection, so it's not real. I'm sorry. Madhyamika says the opposite. It's real because it is a projection. Yeah. So don't come and tell me there's no material causes because you can't point to time at which the material cause really existed. No. There are really material causes because I can't point to a time that it really existed. Madhyamika says the opposite. Madhyamika says all this stuff, all this crap is real. When you die of cancer, it's going to be real. Why? Because it's a projection of your mind. Okay. hang on. Okay. That's all I'm going to say. You can get the rest from the reading. You better give it some honest hours. You'll never do it later, will you? Okay? We'll be on to something else. Chai, take them one by one, okay? Go into the bathroom. Take one with you. You know? My bathroom's hard because I got like 5 people need to use it, you know? But I go in there with my... Anyway. We'll do a little formal logic to make things more fun. Say tak. Tak. Tak means a reason, okay? By the way, tak can mean 3 different things and you better get used to it. Tak can mean the whole logical statement can be called a tak. Consider sounds. They are changing things because they are made. Okay? That's a tak. But sometimes tak means the reason. Because they are made. And sometimes tak means the main thing mentioned in the reason. Made. Made thing. Okay? So tak, you gotta be, it's a very slippery, greasy word in formal logic. Again, I'll repeat. It can refer to the whole logical argument. Tak. It can refer to the whole thing because it's a made thing. Or it can refer to the thing mentioned in the because statement. Made. Made thing. Made thing. Without the is stuck onto it. Okay? And that tak is very greasy and it can mean all 3. Okay? What's the definition of a tak? Anything you put forward as a tak. Okay? Because the sky is green with pink polka dots every day. Okay? That's a thought. Why? Because I put it forth as a thought. To prove what? It doesn't matter, you see. I said because. You don't need to know anything else. Because the sky every day is green with pink polka dots. It's thought. Why? Thought's a kupa yin becha. Because you gave it as a thought. You gave it as a reason. It doesn't matter what I'm trying to prove. It's a reason why. I gave it as a reason. That's all. Dakskupa dakitini. A lot of people feel uncomfortable with that, you know, like, but it doesn't seem right to me. Hey, I didn't say it was a definition of a correct reason. I said it was a definition of a reason. Okay? And you have to get used to that distinction. There's a big difference between a reason and a correct reason, which you know from talking to your boss. Okay. Yeah, like the whole statement meaning, consider the horns on a rabbit's head. They are good to eat because the sky is green with pink stripes. And that's a talk. That's a talk. It's a logical argument. Okay. It's an irrational logical argument. Yeah, by the way, I mean logical as meaning presented in the format of a logical statement. I don't mean as... ontologically correct, okay? Almost an entomologically, but you know what I mean. Okay? You know, when I say logical statement, I mean an attempted logical statement, okay? Obviously. Okay? An argument, right? An argument that someone presents to you. Okay? That's a thought. Yeah? He said, at what point does illogical become logical? When it's something you really want. Okay. Say that, yang that, da yang that, da yang that. Okay, you got to get used to it. It's like a mantra on the debate ground. Da yang that. Da yang that means a correct reason. You know, a reason that holds, and it could mean any of the above. A logical statement which is correct. A whole because statement which is correct. Or something you've put forward as the little element in the because statement, which is correct, okay? Yeah. To start a debate. By the way, she asked, why would you make a statement that's not correct in the first place? Every great debater who ever lived, who wants to teach students, you see, you always, I've seen these great, great geshes get up in the assembly, and 1,000 monks standing there, and they look at who's the opponent, and they know that this guy has a problem understanding something. And they pick that, and they purposely take a wrong position. I mean, if you're really, really good at debating, you take these very subtle wrong positions, and you see if the guy can prove you wrong. Why? To help everybody else who's listening. These are bodhisattva debaters. They're not trying to win the argument. They're trying to teach the people around them. You see what I mean? It's a whole different mindset. They're going to present an argument which is very, very subtle, which is almost true, which is a mistaken idea that most of the monks there have, and they're going to see if the other guy can prove them wrong, because they want the other guy to prove them wrong. You see what I mean? It's seeing debaters in the monastery is beautiful. It's like all these bodhisattvas trying to present an argument which is very slightly wrong, and seeing if this guy can... It's like setting yourself up in a chess game to be checkmated, to help the other guy, to learn to checkmate you. You see what I mean? And it's a whole different mindset. You know, it's a very beautiful mindset. Yeah. Say again? Do they not graduate? They end up... They get the real graduation, yeah? Most of the greatest geshes in the monastery are guys that didn't quite finish their horamba, you know? Because they ended up serving some other lama or something. You know? There's many people like that. And I guess they got their real horamba, right? Anyway. Say, Dāngyāndāng. Dāngyāndāng. Correct reason. Definition of correct reason is... And that's going to be the whole rest of our say, Tsusum Yimba. Tsusum Yimba. Dāngyāndāng Tsenyi. Tsusum Yimba. Dāngyāndāng Ki Tsenyi. Definition of a correct reason is Tsusum Yimba. Okay. Tsusum Yimba is a nasty, nasty word to translate. Okay? Tsu means way. Tsu means way. Tsu means three. Yimba means that which is. That which is the three ways. I translate it as... How did I translate that? A reason where the three relationships hold. Okay? A reason where the three relationships hold. Three relationships have to hold true in a logical statement, and then we can say that it's a good reason or a good logical statement, correct logical statement. Okay? Tsusum Yimba, Dāngyāndāng Tsenyi. And this is very cool. When you give an argument to somebody, if you're a Buddhist and you're trying to prove something, they have to already accept every part of your argument. And that's a rule of Buddhist logic. Okay? You're not allowed to try to prove something to somebody using any idea that they don't already accept. Okay? And as Buddhists in a new Buddhist country, you better get good at it. And when you try to discuss Buddhism with your friends at work or whatever, and you have an impasse, it's because you have failed. You see? You have broken the rules of logic. You have introduced something that they cannot accept yet. Okay? So when you're trying to prove something as a Buddhist, and American Buddhists in the first generation of American Buddhism will be called upon often to prove things, right? The next generation will be lazy. They'll believe in past lives because mom and dad told them. You know? I don't look forward to being in that generation. I think I'll get enlightened in this one, you know. You know, they'll be doing their books because mom and dad made them do it, you know. And they'll hate it, you know. But we're in a very good generation right now. We're in a pioneering generation. We are the Kadampas of America, right? And if you're going to stick to the rules of Buddhist logic, you cannot ever give an argument to somebody using any concept, any term, any thought that they haven't already figured out and that they don't already accept. And that's the principle behind Tsusum Yimba. Okay? That's the principle behind the three relationships. You as a Buddhist in America have to be able to present your arguments for this worldview using only those things which the other people already accept. You know? And that's an art. That's the art of reasoning. Okay, that's the name of the class, right? That's an art form. And you can do it. You see, the beauty of Buddhism is that it is logical, and only with the information that Americans already understand and accept, you can prove every single Buddhist concept to them. okay? If you do it carefully and logically. And you, so we're going to talk about the rules of logic, and then hopefully it'll affect the way you present Buddhism to other people and to yourself. You see, the Pramanavartika has 4 chapters. One of them is called How to Prove Stuff to Yourself. One of them is called How to Prove Stuff to Other People. You see what I mean? It's cool. Even Dharmakirti, Master Dharmakirti, was aware of this difference. You have to be able to prove things to yourself, and then you have to know how to prove things to other people. You see what I mean? And it's very beautiful. You will not be able, and it will not be helpful, and you won't succeed to present Buddhism to other people unless you stick to this rule of using only those things which they already accept. And it's enough in America. You don't have to use voodoo. You know, you don't have to use future lives and stuff like that, pretas that nobody can see, hell realms that nobody can see. You don't have to talk about them until you establish their existence logically with someone. And you can. That's the beauty of trying to defend Buddhism, is that it's logical. And you can prove anything about Buddhism starting from where people already accept, starting from what they already accept. Yeah. And by the way, if you get to something they don't accept, step back further until you reach something they do accept. Excuse me? Yeah, you can. Jay brought up a good point, you know. Can you use reasons that are wrong, but you know the other person will accept them and it will help them? You see what I mean? And in Buddhism, you'll see in some of the kachigmas, we will agree to something they say so they can hang themselves using their own wrong idea. Okay? And that's okay. But it's tricky. Because somebody will quote you out of context. Jay Han once said, you know, somebody will take it out of context and use it. So you have to be very, very careful about, you know, yeah, you can argue, you know, things like, well, why God isn't like that, you know. God is a nice guy. Why would God kill people, you know? Why would God make people and then kill them? And already you're talking about something that doesn't exist. You're describing how many inches long is the horn on the top of a rabbit's head, and you're arguing whether they're 6 inches or 8 inches. You know what I mean? Because the thing you're talking about doesn't even exist. But you have to use that word because you're talking to someone. Yeah, you can do that. It's acceptable to use that. But then by the end, you have to say, and by the way, they're not 6 inches or 8 inches. They don't exist at all. But you can't start out that way either, can you? Yeah. Yeah. She said, well, then what does His Holiness mean, the Dalai Lama, when he says, you know, everybody's ideas are useful and that's good enough. Everybody should use the ideas. Say tatuk, tepachik. Tatuk, tepachik. All spiritual paths eventually lead to one thing. You see what I mean? There's this huge debate in Buddhism. Are there really Hinayana and Mahayana and Vajrayana, or, you know, are they separate or are they one thing? And we debate it in the monastery day after day, and the answer is no. They all lead to, eventually, they always lead to Vajrayana. I mean, eventually they always lead to the highest path. You must eventually reach that path. Is it right that everybody in the world should sit here and argue about syllogisms? And is that going to fit everybody in the world? You tell me. I mean, no, obviously not. And so there's every spiritual path which brings a person further along is valuable because there's someone who needs that right now. And there has to be all those paths. If the path exists, it means that it's helping somebody. If it didn't help anybody, it would disappear. You see what I mean? So it does help somebody. And it brings them a little closer. But Tartu Tepachik, in the end, they have to enter Majjhimika. In the end, they must see emptiness and the relationship between emptiness and karma. But obviously, it would be stupid to force people into do that, you know, just right away. It wouldn't be helpful. It would hurt people. Okay, we'll stop, take a break, and then come back in 10 minutes, okay? Yeah, good. Here for the break. Do you want it back? Okay, I don't know.
If anyone's listening, I'll take this one.
Okay, we said a good reason was one where three relationships had to hold. And the definition of a good reason is susum yimba. Say susum yimba. Susum yimba. When Rinpoche was first learning English, he had a student in Washington named Susan Meinheit, and he would call her Susum Meinheit, okay? If you ever see her, you can call her Tulsum, okay? So there are three relationships. I'll give you the three. Here's the first one. Say, Chokchu? Chokchu? The thing choked, okay. Opening lines of the Pramana Vartika after the praise of the Buddha is the Chokchu Deche Kyapa Itadu Deni Namasum, which means first there should be a Chokchu, and then there should be a Deche Kyapa Yi, okay? Chokchu is the first relationship. It's the relationship between the reason. And if you struggle through the second half of the reading, you'll see what choke means and what chu means and why choke refers to the subject and chu refers to the reason and like that. There's mitun chokes, there's tun chokes, there's chokchus, and there's chokudilyu, and you can spend a couple weeks on that. Say chokchu. Chokchu. So we'll give our classic argument, okay? Take sounds. They are changing things because they are things which are made. Okay? Take sounds. They are changing things because they are things which are made. It's a classic Dakyang Dan. It's a classic correct statement or correct reason. Okay? Take sounds. They are changing things. Consider sounds. They are changing things because they are made. Chokchu, the test of Chokchu would be, is being made a quality that applies to sound? Does number three apply to number one? Okay, that's all. I mean, when I was in the debate ground, I would just cheat and remember three applies to one, three applies to one, you know? What's three? Because it's made. Okay. Does being made apply to sound? Yes. So the first requirement of a correct reason is satisfied. Chokchu exists. Chokchu is present. The necessary relationship between the third item and the first item does hold true. Okay? The relationship holds. What? The thing you gave in your reason, which is because it's made, it's a made thing, does apply to sound. Shenden chu chen kyu me ge ten du gu sen dan tu ba yu ba ni de ten me nge ba chou chou ge ten yi. The long definition is too long. You can read it in the reading, okay? What does it involve? You don't have to write this, okay? It should involve that, look, the other guy better accept that. Temenge. He must have already perceived that it's true that sound is a thing which is made. Okay? The first requirement of Chokchu is that the opponent must have already perceived that that's the correct thing. You know? Buddhism is the one and only religion because it's what I follow. Okay? Chokchu holds. The other two don't, okay? I mean, for him. But he's already perceived that Buddhism is something that you follow, okay? By the way, that doesn't make it a correct reason yet because there's two other tools, right? But Chokchu holds. The first relationship holds. You see what I mean? Consider the sky. It's good to taste because it's blue. Chokchu holds. The sky is blue. Is everything that's blue good to taste? I don't know. Okay. Now that's another question, right? But the first soul holds. The first relationship holds. Okay? And that's called Chokchu. And the opponent must have perceived that it's correct. The opponent must already agree that what you said last applies to what you said first. Sounds are made things. Okay? What are the other two relationships? Well, Oh, by the way, if you want to say in Tibetan, Dra means sounds, and Jepa means things that are made. And in the debate ground, if somebody says, show me an example of Chogche, all you have to say is, Dra Jepa? Dra Jepa? Dra Jepa? Dra Jepa? Dra Jepa? Chogche Yimbe? Okay? Dra Jepa is the Chogche. That relationship holds. Sounds are made things. Okay? That's the first one. So if someone asks you on your homework, give an example in Tibetan of a Chogche, you can say, Dra Jepa. Very succinct. I mean, debate language is very, very rapid fire. You know, you don't go through and say, oh, blah, 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 blah. You say, Dra Jepa. You know? It gives the other guy less time to think, okay? Number two, second relationship. Say, Jacob. Jacob. It's a big, long word, okay? Doesn't mean much. I mean, the positive necessity between the reason and the thing to be proven. Okay, let's go slow. What's the reason you gave the guy? Because sounds are made. Sounds are made. Okay? Sounds are things that are made. That was the reason you gave the guy. Things that are made. What's the quality about sound that you're trying to prove? It's a changing thing. It's a changing thing. What's the subject under discussion? Sounds or sound. Okay? So you have three units, right? Subject, quality you're trying to prove, and the reason you gave. Take sounds, number one. They are changing things, number two. By the way, he doesn't accept that, right? You're trying to prove it to him. So this is the quality to be proven about sound. And the third thing was the reason you gave for it. Oh, because it's a made thing. Okay? Because it's a made thing. To put it very simply, Jacob is simply the relationship between number three and number two. What was Chokchur was the relationship between number one and number three, right? Now you have the relationship between number three and number two. And if I say it in simple English, it'll be fine for you. If something is a made thing, it must be a changing thing. That's Jacob. That's the expression of Jacob. Okay? I'll say it again. If it's number three, it must be number two. What was Chokchur? Number one is number three. I mean, when I was in the debate ground, I would get all confused if I didn't think, number one is number three. Is number three number two? That's all. Just remember that. Now, technically, it's a lot more complicated than that, but that's enough to memorize now. Okay. Chokchu, first relationship. Number one is number three. What? Sounds are made things. Jacob, if it's number three, it must be number two. What? If something is made, it must be a changing thing. That's all. That's Jacob. That's the second relationship that must be true. It must hold true if that's going to be a good reason. If this is going to be a proof that holds. So far we have two other relationships that must be there. Okay? First one, number three is true of number one. Second one, if something is number three, it must be number two. I call it the positive necessity. When I say positive, I'm implying there might be a negative necessity. But we'll get there, okay? Let's express the Jacob in Tibetan for that proof. And here it is. Very, very classic. Okay? Chena mitape kyam. Chena mitape kyam. That's the expression of the second relationship. I'm simplifying it grossly for you, okay? I mean, the long definition you can see in the text, and it's a lot more complicated than it looks. I'm just trying to get you home tonight, okay? Say, Chena, mitape kyop. Chena, mitape kyop. Okay? Anything that's a made thing must be a changing thing. That relationship has to hold if we have a good proof. Okay? Third thing. Say, Dokyap. Dokyap. To put it simply, the expression of Dokyap, or the negative necessity, is if it ain't number two, it can't be number three. I mean, to put it very simply. Okay? If it ain't number two, it can't be number three. If something's not a changing thing, it can't be a made thing. Okay? If something wasn't a changing thing, it could never be a made thing. And that's Dokyo. That's the third tsu. That's the third relationship which must hold true if you're going to have a Taryanda, a correct reason. Okay? If something is a if something wasn't a changing thing, it could never be a made thing. That's all. All three of those relationships have to hold true. If those three hold true, the thing is a correct reason. Now there are other details, you know. I'll give you a few of them. You don't have to remember them. You could have a case where a guy cut up and said, take sound, it's a changing thing because it's sound. Is that a good proof? No, because the guy already doesn't accept that sound is a changing thing. So it's not a proof for him to say sound is a changing thing because it's sound. Unfortunately, sound fits all the three tools. Why? Well, sound applies to sound. If something's sound, it must be a changing thing. If something wasn't a changing thing, it couldn't be sound. So they throw in another thing in the definition, in the technical definition, which is this long, okay? You can't be the same as the subject, exactly. Okay. You gotta change it slightly. Okay. Then they also say, gutsu dantumba. Gutsu dantumba means, in the way you stated it, okay? Which means, it's a different thing if I say, take sounds, they are changing things because they're made, or if I say, take sound, changing things exist because they're made. If I change the verb there, okay, in Tibetan it's the difference between yimba and yupa. Okay, if I say yupa instead of yimba, I open a big can of worms. Okay, technically all the little pieces fit, but I've used a verb that means a lot more than to be. I didn't say sounds are made things. I said sounds have made things, or made things exist with sounds. And in Tibetan, you know, in Sanskrit and Tibetan, that's a big deal. Of course, in English it is too. But it's more subtle in Tibetan. You could have said have, or you could have said is, and there's a big difference between the two. If you think about it, the word is in English has both meanings. You know, it is meaning it exists, or it is a book meaning its identity is that. There's a difference between it is a book and it is, right? And that's a subtle difference. In English, we only have one word, and you're going to have some trouble there. Okay? We have the word to be. In Tibetan, you have two separate words for to be something or to be. Meaning, and it's the difference between to be and to exist. Okay? You don't say, this exists a pen. You say, it is a pen. And it's the same in Tibetan. But unfortunately, the English word is can mean to exist or to be something. Okay? And you're going to have to fool around with that. Yeah? Yeah. You can say it either way. It's the same thing. If something is three, no, you can't say it the second way. Yeah. The quality expressed in the reason applies to the subject. Yeah. You can say it that way. Yeah. By the way, another part of the definition is only apply. And you'll see that, meaning always apply. There's not like a time when number three doesn't apply to number one. And that's another part of the definition. So the definition, the real definition is like that long. Okay? Yeah. Yeah, jkyup is if three, then two. Dokyup is if not two, then not three. Yeah. I'm surprised no one said that that amounts to the same thing. But I'll let you worry about that. Okay. Everybody's asleep. Okay. hang on. Is something? Here's an example of a dokyap, okay? Dokyap. I said dokyap. Sorry. Dokyap. Dokyap would be tagna. Say tagna. Machepe. Kyap. Takna, machepe, kyap. Which is to say, if something is not made, it cannot be, sorry, if something is not changing, it cannot be made. Is that what I wrote there? Yeah, if something is unchanging, it cannot be made. All right? And that's Dokkha. If those three things are true, if those three relationships hold, then your argument is a good argument. What? If sound is a made thing, that's relationship number one, Chokchu. If it's true that anything which is made must be changing, that's relationship number two, Jekyap. And if it's true that if it's not changing, it cannot be made, Dokyap. If those three things are true, then that's a good argument to that person. And he must perceive the truth of those three elements. Okay? He must. Or else it's a bad reason. It's a bad logic for him. Okay? There's an interesting thing. He must also perceive the existence of each of the terms you use in each of the three slots. What? He must have perceived what a sound is. He must understand what sound is. You can't say zvuk or something like that. He's like, what's a zvuk? You know, I don't know. Okay? And you can't say, you know, here, when you have to say changing thing, he must understand what changing thing means. If you say changing thing to an Eskimo who doesn't know English, even though it, you see, even though it's correct by Western terms, in Western logic, it's not correct in Buddhist logic. And that's very, very important. You cannot use words to people that they don't understand what they mean yet. In Buddhist logic, you just became false. Your argument just became false. It's not real anymore. It's not true anymore. Why? He doesn't know what a zvuk is. Okay. This means you can't go around screaming at people like, you know, you have to accept pretas, you know. And they're like, what's a preta? You know, and you see, they have to accept the terms. By the way, they don't have to perceive it directly. I mean, you can discuss hell realms because they can have a dhati about hell realms. You know, you can discuss the existence of hell realms. It doesn't mean they perceive the existence of hell realms. It means they understand what you mean when you say a hell realm. Okay? They understand what the term refers to, even though they don't accept that it exists. Okay? And that's okay. You can use words like that. But you can't use terms which they just totally can't relate to. Okay? And you can't say things about them. You can't, none of those relationships, the relationship of 3 to 1, the relationship of 3 to 2, and the relationship of not two, not three, they must all be already something which he accepts. If you get really sensitive to this point, you'll see that the only thing you're doing when you prove something to somebody is you're taking them through something they already accept, but they haven't tied it together yet. You see what I mean? If somebody accepted that sound was a made thing, if somebody accepted already that all made things are changing things, if somebody already accepted that if it wasn't a changing thing, it couldn't be a made thing, then they're just an inch away from accepting that sound isn't a changing thing. And you're just helping them realize what they didn't tie together yet. And that's all good logic is. You're not allowed to use any other kind of logic with somebody when you're trying to prove something in Buddhism. It's very cool. You are, it's your obligation as an American Buddhist to reduce your argument to using facts which they already accept. And that's difficult and it's beautiful because then nobody will ever complain about it, you know. You're only giving them facts which they already accept. You're just tying it together in a fresh way. You're giving them a fresh outlook on these facts that they already accept. You can prove future lives, you can prove past lives, you can prove emptiness, you can prove karma, you can prove the non-existence of a creator, you can prove the falsity of the worldview of Western civilization using facts that people already accept. You don't have to go into voodoo or mysticism. They don't have to have a spiritual awakening experience on their meditation seat. All of Buddhist philosophy, all of Buddhist beliefs, because they are true, can be confirmed with normal facts that normal people can see. If you are unable, after extended talks with someone, to demonstrate the truth of the Buddhist worldview, as opposed to the New York Times worldview, and I'm not kidding, the worldview of Western civilization, which is false, which is incorrect, then one of two things is happening. Either they are so steeped in their voodoo of their Western civilization, that they can't, that there's some point they're being illogical. Everything you said is true. Everything you said they must accept. They refuse to draw the same conclusion. Then we say, I can't debate with some crazy guy, okay? In the monastery, you say, if you're going to be crazy, if you're going to accept all the facts I gave you, and then you just refuse to tie them together in the way that is objectively correct, then what can I do? You're crazy, Like you say, is the sky blue? Yes. Is blue a color? Yes. So the sky has a color, right? No. Then you say, I can't do anything. I can't work with you. You know what I mean? I mean, that's the one possibility. But the more likely possibility is that you have not reduced it to the facts that they already accept. And you must. So when you talk to people, you have to be in that mind frame. If you fail, and we're talking people's lives, right? We're talking life and death here. If you practice Buddhism correctly, you enter a Buddha paradise, you don't have to die like this. You're talking people's lives are at stake. Literally, a person's life is at stake on your persuasiveness. Then you have to be very good at going down to the facts that they already accept. You must reduce Buddhism to the facts that normal American people can accept. And if you stay up there in this ivory tower with things that they could never accept or never understand, and you say, I don't care if the common people don't get it, then really you're just contributing to their murder, in a sense. You see what I mean? You're contributing to their death. You have to bring it down to what people can accept. Or you're not a Buddhist, You're not presenting it in a Buddhist way because those are the rules of Buddhist logic. You're required to go down to what they can already accept. And it's your responsibility to try. Right? People's lives are at stake.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then you haven't. He said, "What if you want to start an argument with the fact that the definition of existence is that which is perceived by a valid perception as being existing? You can't use that for people who don't accept that. You have to go further. You have to reduce it further. You have to prove that first. You can't use that as a building block. If you can't prove it, then I'm not going to accept it." Well, you have to prove it according to their own experience. You have to say, doesn't it seem to you that the way to prove that something exists is that it's there when you see it's there and you're not drunk or crazy or hallucinating or overcome with some emotion? And if they can't have a problem with that, then you have to reduce it further. You must reduce it further. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Nothing is a priori. You must be able to prove everything. Nothing is a priori. Sure. No time tonight. We can do it. There must be. You have to prove it. You have to be able to prove it. Or else you're already, you're saying hell realms exist because preta realms exist, okay? And they're like, well, wait a minute. I didn't agree to either one yet, So you have to go down to what they can accept. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Brooks gave a very interesting question. Can you prove that proofs themselves are valid? Is logic airtight? And this is a common misperception of people. They say when you get to Tantra, you can throw out logic or something like that. No, not at all. Well, when you get into deep meditation on emptiness, you go beyond, you transcend the limitations of logic. Bullshit! Really. No, really. It can all be confirmed. This presentation that you are getting here is the immediate cause of having the highest mystical experience possible, which is the direct perception of emptiness. And don't let anyone tell you anything different. It's false. Totally false. They are murdering you. You know, they are contributing directly to your continued suffering in this planet. You know, it's not at all true. You know, the logic is absolutely brings you straight up to those experiences. And Tantra and logic are husband and wife. You know, they love each other. They live together. They're married. You know, don't ever let anyone say different. You know, we could prove it. I mean, Temar Gyurpa Drola Penshe Pa, opening lines of the Paramarthika. The being who cares most about all living creatures, who is incapable of lying, said that logic is the way. You know, and that's the opening lines. But then they go through other arguments. But don't let anybody tell you it's totally false. Okay. The way your mind works, the way grammar itself works, the way language works, the way computers work, you know, the way thinking works is correct. And emptiness is based on a logical thinking, and the highest realizations of Tantra and the highest practices of Tantra are based thoroughly on logic. And don't let anybody tell you something else. It's just not true. Okay. Yeah. I told you I was waiting for someone to ask that, yeah? He said, I can never think of a case where number two would hold, where number three wouldn't hold, and vice versa. Cook it. Okay. By the way, there is no such thing. Well, no, you figure it out. Then why would they have three instead of two? You figure it out. Work on it. Come back to me later. Okay. It's mainly for the benefit of the opponent. Okay. I'll give you a clue. But I used to wonder about the same thing. It's a good question. It's a really good question. Okay, last thing. That last thing syndrome. very, very simple. Okay? Say, Dachi Chen. Mitate. Chebe Chen. Okay? Consider sounds. They are changing things because they are men. Okay? Then you would say what if you're the opponent? If I said, Chepa Yimbe Echen, because they are men, if you're debating me, what would you say? They are. You just repeat the verb. Right, they are. Okay, no argument. I mean, it's a really lousy way to start a debate in the monastery, you know. If you start out with a correct reason, then everybody just sits there and looks at you. You know, and then the guy's, mayin, you know, and then he immediately changes back, you know, because it... Every once in a while, some kid gets up, you know, and there's 1,000 people watching. He's been practicing all morning, you know. He goes, I am major, and he forgets to put the negative in, you know. And, man, you know, and everybody just sits there and goes, you know, and because he said something true. You can't start an argument with something true. Okay? Normally, okay. Unless you just want everybody staring at you, you know, which happens, okay. So if I say, Dachi-chen, mitakte, Mache Vichar, okay? Sounds are changing things because they are not made. You say, Natak, Ta, Tamadu, Tamadu. Which is to say, that's wrong. It's incorrect to say that sounds are not made things. That's what Tamadu means, okay? So to a proposition ending in cheer, which is because, one of the answers you can give, and the most common answer is Tamadu. The thing you said for number three is not correct about number one. It's not true that sounds are not made things. Okay? So how about this? Jachichen, mitakte, yubeichen. Okay? Sounds are changing things because they exist. Then what do you say? Yeah, it doesn't necessarily mean home. In Tibetan, kyaba machu. Say kyaba machu. Kyaba machu. It doesn't necessarily follow. Okay? It's true that sound is a existing thing. Chokcho holds. Relationship number one holds. But those other two are a problem. Just because something's made doesn't mean it's changing. Okay? Just because it's something made doesn't mean it's changing. And conversely, not everything which is changing, not changing, doesn't exist. Sorry. Not number two. Sorry. No, right. It's not true that if something is not changing, it can't exist. That's not. All right? Those two and three don't hold. Go home and work on it. Okay? 2 and 3 don't hold. Now there's another way to blow a guy away, you know? And this is called Taengyur, and I'll write it for you. Say Taengyur. Taengyur. In Sanskrit, Prasangika. Okay? Prasangika. Taengyur means a statement, I call it a statement of necessity. Okay? A statement of necessity. Normally, they are absurd. Okay? Absurd. Okay? Somebody says something stupid, and then you give him back a sarcastic, absurd statement. And that's the normal jotang. That's the normal system of a Taengyur. Okay? So let's give an example. Somebody says, take sound. They are changing things because they exist, you know? And you don't say anything. You just say, oh. So I guess emptiness is a changing thing, right? Okay? 多么你就你大把银把它。Okay?多么你大把银把它。 Okay? Oh, I guess emptiness is a changing thing then, huh? Okay? And you go ta at the end, you know? Say 银把它。银把它。 Oh, I guess space is, emptiness is a changing thing, right? Okay, and then you go yimbata. Okay, and that's called a Taengyur. It's a necessary consequence of his stupid statement. Okay? It's a necessary, absurd consequence of his stupid statement. You don't attack him directly, you're just implying something, you know. You're just saying, oh, everything that exists changes, huh? Well, I guess emptiness is changing, right? Changing thing, right? Because in essence, he said, everything that exists changes. If something exists, it must change. He said, by the way, oftentimes it follows a general truth or a universal truth. The opponent will give a kebba, a universal truth, like, everything that exists changes. You say, oh, gee, that's too bad. I guess emptiness is changing, right? Changing thing. It gets more empty, less empty. There's less self-existence, and then there's more self-existence, and then sometimes it's 50% self-existent, sometimes it's not self-existent, and sometimes it's like 30% self-existent, which is ridiculous, right? But you say, I'm sorry. I guess emptiness itself varies, right? It's not the 100% total absence of a thing that never existed, right? It's like sometimes there, sometimes not there, it's changing, variable, you know. Too bad. Guess we can't get enlightened. You know what I mean? Let's take empty. That's called a Taengyur, okay? According to the highest school of Buddhism, there are 4 great schools, right? The highest school is Madhyamika, middle way. There are 2 branches of the middle way school. The highest one is called Taengyur, Taengyuwa. Those who like to use Taengyurs, okay? Those who depend on Taengyurs, those who depend on those sarcastic, oh, too poor little emptiness, it's changing, right? Okay, that's a Taengyur. Okay, why are they called Taengyur? They believe that an opponent can be led to a correct understanding of emptiness simply through a Taengyur. You just had a deeper appreciation of emptiness than you did 10 minutes ago. When I started saying, oh, too bad, poor old emptiness. Sometimes it's 50% absence of a thing that never existed. Sometimes it's a 75% absence of something that never existed. Sometimes it's a 30% absence of something that never existed, right? And that already gave you a deeper appreciation for what it really is, which is a 100.000% absence of something that never could have existed anyway. Okay? And that already gave you some deep insight into emptiness. According to the highest school, the highest middle way school, that's enough for you to get a lot of fresh, enlightening information about emptiness. I don't have to go on and say, look, Brooks, don't you get it? It's impossible for it to be 30% empty. It's 100% empty, okay? Just you don't have to go through that. That's a thought, that's a jorwa, that's an assertion. You don't have to go through that. Just the sarcastic question is enough. And if he's got any brain at all, he'll say, oh, hey, you know what? He's right. It has to be 100% empty. Or it couldn't be empty. You know, so that's a tengyo. That's a prasangika. And that's why they're called prasangika, if anybody ever asks you. Yeah. Well, you may vipatayeva latene domenito. You perceive emptiness based on an infinite number of reasons. Okay? But the assertion is that the opponent can be led to a deep understanding of emptiness simply by asking sarcastic questions based on stupid things he already said. You know, using stupid things he already said. No, you haven't proven anything of your own. But he gets it, and that's what prasangika means. Okay, that's what a prasangika is. Okay, so just learn that. It most often follows a universal statement. Okay? If something is a fruit, it must be an apple. Oh, well, I guess oranges are apples. Yimbata. Okay? Yimbata. Alright? And it's just a sarcastic question. Next week we'll get into the answers to a tell. Okay? There's two answers you can give to a tell. I go, tell. Then you can say two different things, and we'll get into next week. All right, one more thing, okay? When you believe the tengyo, you go up. And they never tell you that. Okay? Yimba tao? Say these two things. Yimba tao. Hear my voice going down? Yimba tao. Okay? Are you telling me that? Okay, that's what it sounds like in Tibetan. Say again. Yimba tao. Okay, now listen to the other one. Yimba tao? Okay? Yimba tao? That means, it is so, okay? See, the first one is, so is it? And by the way, that's why you get the weird English in the translation, okay? Because I'm trying to get one English word that gives you the tell, right? Hear it. So is it true that, it is so true that, you see what I mean? And that's the two senses of tell. I was trying to find one English word that did both things too, okay? If the tell goes up, it means you're saying something you really do believe. It is so. You know, it is so true. And in English you go up. You know, oh, so is it. And that's when you go down. Okay? Sarcastic one, the false one, the absurd one goes down. Now, how do you get that in a text? How do you know if his voice went up or went down? Huh? You have to know whether it's true or not. You have to know whether our side would ever say that or not. And it's very bad. Okay? And you can spend months trying to figure out, does this one go up or down? I'm sorry. Okay? When you're translating a text, you actually have to skip beyond it to see, is it something we believe or not? And then you have to translate it accordingly. And you have to get used to that. Okay? It's a very unfortunate thing about Tibetan. Okay? So tengyur can also be a necessity that we do believe in. Okay? It is so true that all fruits have colors. Okay? Oh, so an orange is red, or an orange is an apple. Okay, and you have to get used to that. Those are the two tells. Okay? And then next class we'll start the actual debating, and we'll break up into little debating. Don't get worried about it, it's fun. Or maybe I'll just stand here and you can scream at me. How's that? We'll start like that, all right? Okay, we'll do some prayers, all right?
This is the end of Class 4.
You have been listening to The Art of Reasoning with Geshe Michael Roach, presented by the Asian Classics Institute.
The Asian Classics Institute is dedicated to preserving the pure teachings and practice of Buddhism. For a listing of other topics available, write to the Asian Classics Institute, P.O. Box 20373, New York, New York, 10009, or call 212-475-7752.